I'm Charlie Wilmoth.
I'm David Todd.
And welcome to the Bucks Dugout Podcast. Welcome to the Bucks Dugout Podcast. I'm here with David Todd. David, you're in New York. What's going on?
In New York, was actually at a new documentary that was released at the Tribeca Film Festival on Saturday night called Knuckleball. It's about Tim Wakefield and R.A. Dickey and has interviews with the Negro brother, Phil Negro and Jim Bouton and a bunch of other guys, and a good film that a friend of mine did, and I actually did some voiceover work, so came up here for that Saturday, which means I didn't get to see much pirate action over the weekend, but I guess it was more of the same.
Yeah, it wasn't very interesting. I mean, other than the start by A.J. Burnett, which was fantastic, that was great to see. But, I mean, a lot of the Pirates baseball we've seen since that one outburst against Arizona last week has been really more of the same, where you just wait for something to happen all game and nothing does because the offense is just so incompetent.
Yep, and Charlie, we've asked people to kind of send comments either on Twitter, comments or questions, and they can do it on the Bucks Dugout podcast thread as all the comments come through on the various articles. We had a pretty good question last week that we want to open with. You want to read that?
Right. This is from PGHFan987, who asks, do you think Pedro Alvarez would benefit by taking an approach similar to the approaches taken by Adam Dunn and Mark Reynolds and swing for the fences each at bat? He seems too tentative to me. I would rather have him err on the side of aggression.
Well, I think it's a good observation, first of all. And my take is this, Charlie. We see when Pedro, when he hit the home run in Arizona, we see that he can have that bat speed that generates the power, just the raw power that he has, and obviously he can hit the ball a long way. But the issue for me really comes down to the reason he looks tentative is it's pitch recognition. And that's the thing that I think, and Jim Callis made a comment that Vlad posted, that maybe he turns out to be one of the biggest busts or waste of talent in draft history if he can't at some point put this all together. I think that's probably a little bit too strong a comment. I think if Pedro at no point over the next 2 years puts it together, I think we can look back and say that everybody had their evaluation of his talent wrong. I'm not sure, other than the raw power, that we've seen the talent as a hitter that people expected to see. And for me, it just comes back to hit pitch recognition. We've seen the bat speed. It's not always there. He certainly has trouble chasing the high stuff upstairs, the fastballs. He looks a little better with some of the off-speed stuff, particularly away. And I do think his approach on the end of the West Coast trip and the little I did get to see on the video clips in St. Louis was a little better, in the sense that he wasn't completely flailing away and looking, you know, useless at the plate. But I think the observation's right, and so I guess my short answer would be I think that will come when he gets more comfortable with himself at the plate. I think the tentativeness is all comes back to, you know, being comfortable there.
Well, I think one issue here is that what exactly the Pirates hope for Alvarez to be and what he can still be, what is still practical for him to become. You know, when he was drafted, he was supposed to be a guy who maybe put up some somewhat slightly lower batting averages, but was otherwise, and struck out a little bit too much, but was otherwise basically a complete hitter. And I guess a related question to the one PGHFan987 asked is, you know, at what point do you cut your losses and expect that he's going to be something less than that and try to get some value out of it anyway?
Yeah, we see different things. I think the Pirates don't have an answer. A clear answer. We see the change in his batting stance with a week left in spring training. We see talk of him using the full park, particularly the left center field gap at PNC, which, you know, all Pirate fans are tired of watching him hit soft grounders to second base. I thought it was a relatively humorous point that he really is a four true outcome guy, and it's he doesn't draw a lot of walks, but we'll put walks in there, and it's strikeouts, home runs, and grounders to second. I thought that was that seems to be probably half his outs that aren't strikeouts. So yeah, I think that's all right. I think the again, do you want him to be a dead pull hitter or a guy who's going to be able to go to the other way because guys are working him on the outside corner, particularly with the off-speed stuff? I think the latter is a better approach, but you know, at some point, they're going to have to probably make that decision again.
Yeah, I mean, one interesting thing in Pedro's output this season and the attention that's been paid to it is of course the fact that you have several other regulars in the lineup who are doing just as badly or even worse. Do you think that Pedro's struggles so far, at least in the regular season, have gotten more attention than they otherwise would or less, as a result of the fact that you have guys like Clint Barmas and Rod Barajas that are doing just as badly?
I think it's probably the same. People, if he's not performing well, regardless of how the rest of the team doing, people are going to look at that and say, if they were 9-6 right now, maybe they say they could be 12-3 if Pedro would be carrying his weight and, you know, everybody else is hitting, why can't he hit? So I don't know that the attention would be much different. I think it's his status as the second player taken in the draft. Was he the second player taken?
Second
player taken in the draft. He's going to always have that legacy with him. And so he's going to be a focal point. And Charlie, following in that vein, obviously the offense has been bad across the board. It's been discussed ad nauseum on BucksDugout.com. Obviously, people are a little bit tired of talking about it, but it's the issue that this team faces. They've gotten great pitching out of the chute here in the first 14-15 games, that much like they got last year. Certainly, the injuries now to Carstens and Correa seems very minor because they've announced him as a starter on Tuesday, so it doesn't look like a big setback for him. And Burnett will step in for Carstens, and we'll see what Dr. James Andrews has to say when he looks at the pictures. But this offense is historically bad, and there's a couple different thoughts about this. That first is the era is now – we are in a dead ball era. A lot of teams are putting up very soft, for lack of a better term, offensive numbers here early in the season. Maybe a little bit weather-related, but scoring production seems to be down kind of across the board if you're not the Texas Rangers or Detroit Tigers. And the Pirates are certainly kind of leading that charge. And I guess the number that jumped out to me, this is something I said at the beginning of the season, I didn't think they'd score 600 runs, but we're 10% into the season, and they're now on pace to score 324 runs, which would be the lowest season-long output in post-1900. Obviously, that they've played 15 games. They've scored 30 runs in 15 games. People can do the math there. That's 2 runs a game. And the team batting average, the triple slash line, is .202, .249, .281. You take McCutchen out, they're batting .182. So I think everybody's kind of familiar with what's going on if they're following the Pirates. This isn't news to people. But let me ask you just a very simple question. People talk about batting average and balls in play. People talk about regression to the norm. My concern with these guys is not necessarily that Barajas is going to hit .067 all season long. My concern is these guys don't look particularly good at the plate. Their approach doesn't look good. They continue to strike out a lot and not draw walks. And I just don't think – yes, I don't. Do I think it'll be this bad all year long? No. But I just don't think it's going to get markedly better across the board. What do you think of that?
I mean, I guess it depends on what you mean by markedly better. But, I mean, to put this in perspective, like this thing about it being a dead ball era, about us returning to a dead ball era, that may be true, but the Pirates have scored 30 runs. The next closest team is Philadelphia with 43, so, I mean, it's a totally different order of magnitude. The next highest team above that is Oakland, who has 52. So, I mean, Oakland is ranked 28th in the majors in runs scored right now, and they have almost twice the number that the Pirates do. So, will it go on being, you know, this bad? No, probably not. But I think you're right. I mean, it's not as if you know, we've seen a lot of guys hitting screaming liners that have been caught so far this season. We've seen, you know, maybe a little bit of that, but not very much. And we've seen guys like Alvarez, like Jose Tabata, who've just looked awful. I mean, I don't really see much to draw from their performances at all. And, you know, you have guys like Barmas and Barajas, and we knew when they were signed that there's some risk at their age that they're just going to completely fall off a cliff. And so the odds that the Pirates could get, you know, very little out of those two signings is really pretty high.
It seems to be getting higher every day. We've let our thoughts – I've certainly let my thoughts be known about that. So, well, let's look at the bright side here. But the bullpen, I think, is leading the majors with an ERA right around 2. Good stuff again this weekend in general. It looks to me, though, the one negative here is Evan Meek. I don't think Meek's going to make it. And I think with the talk they've had about maybe adding a second lefty, which is a little confusing. Clint Hurdle talked about coming out of camp, taking the 7 best relievers – without regard to handedness. And here we are 15 games in with the bullpen performing really well, and he's talking about bringing a second lefty up. And obviously he talked about Moskis, and he talked about Doug Slayton, which was interesting, I thought. We saw the Pirates make a move to get Burnett back in. They sent Jared Hughes down. I think they probably knew Correa wasn't going to be able to go the next day, so they had to reinstate AJ. I think that might have been why they burned Jared Hughes for three innings, which seemed somewhat odd at the time, certainly. But I was speculating that they might make that move to bring that lefty up right then and there. They didn't do it because of the Burnett move. But, you know, with me continuing to be a little bit inconsistent in his performance, he in my mind, would be the guy who goes down.
Yeah, probably. But maybe you can explain this to me. Why are we talking about two lefties? Why is Clint Hurdle, anyway, talking about two lefties right now?
Well, matchup king, I guess, right? He wants to be able to go lefty-lefty more than once a game.
Yeah, but the fact that he doesn't really have the personnel to do that has not really changed. I mean, we know Doug Slayton's not a very good reliever. We kind of know that Danny Moskis is not very good. All we have to really go on at this point, as I'm looking at the Indianapolis statistics right now, the only thing that I could think of that's really catching Hurdle's eye is their ERA numbers, which, you know, don't really mean a whole lot. Is that what's getting this going right now, or is this something that Hurdle has always wanted?
I think it's something that he wants. We talked last year. He said the exact same thing, and then you see Garrett Olson immediately added to the roster when he became available, actually pitched reasonably well, I thought, again, and he went with the we want two lefties in the bullpen. So it seems to me that the past two springs, what he really wants and what he has done at the beginning of the season are two different things, and he's decided once he gets into the games that that's not the way it's going to be. He's going to want to have two lefties. So I'm guessing we'll see Moskis sooner rather than later. We also heard, Charlie, they've announced with tonight's game being canceled, the starters for the next couple of days. They're going to pitch Correa on Tuesday and McDonald and Morton on Wednesday. Are you at all surprised after Brad Lincoln's performance the other day that he got passed over?
I guess it kind of makes sense to continue to use him as a long man, and if Correa is ready to go, then I can see a sort of inertia forcing them to kind of stick with that. It doesn't really bother me too much one way or the other. Lincoln is still going to be on the team, just working in a long relief sort of capacity. What are your thoughts on that?
I guess I think everybody's done a good enough job at this point that nobody should lose their spot. And with Burnett stepping in essentially for Karstens now, I'm not surprised he got passed over. He'll continue to get opportunities to pitch in situations that are high leverage like he did in San Francisco or Arizona, excuse me. But it's going to be interesting to watch because he was pretty good out there, even though one ball got absolutely crushed. It was a good performance. So on that, Charlie, let me ask you, if you take the seven guys, and it's the five currently in the rotation, and Brad Lincoln and Jeff Karstens, if all seven were healthy right now, how would you rank them in terms of if you had to list 1 through 7, who you think should be one and who should be seven?
In terms of talent, like talent right now?
Yeah, right now you're setting the Pirates rotation. You're going to set it at seven men. Or essentially, you're going to set it at five, and the bottom two aren't going to be in the rotation. Let's do it two ways. First, do it on right today if you weren't worried about career and future and development, and then you can adjust it accordingly with all the real-life factors.
Okay. Well, I mean, the tough thing about this is that we don't really know exactly what to make of Burnett at this point or how excited to get about his first start, which was really, really good. But I think Burnett and Bedard in one order or the other have to be number one and number two. After that, it's kind of a toss-up. I mean, maybe Morton at that point. McDonald hasn't really impressed me so much this year at all, but he'd probably be number four, and then Lincoln probably number five. And you know I'm not a big fan of Correa, and Karstens is currently hurt.
Well, let's assume Karstens is healthy. Where do you put him on that list?
I mean, the temptation to put him at three is really pretty great, just because he seems to, over the past year and a half or so, he seems to have had a consistency and a competence that the other starters haven't had. I mean, obviously, as far as their futures are concerned, Morton and McDonald are a lot more interesting because of their stuff. And for Morton, because of his ability to get ground balls. But for right now, if I have to pick a guy, assuming everybody's healthy, if I have to pick a guy out of those three to go out there tomorrow and win a game, I'd probably pick Karstens.
No, that's interesting, Charlie. I won't even respond because I'm pretty much exactly with you. I'd probably put Morton ahead of Carstens, but I'd put them both ahead of McDonald. And, you know, like I said, I'm not a Correa basher. I think he was better last year than people gave him credit for because he was so bad at the end of the year. And Lincoln pitching three good innings and having another couple good starts in AAA. And, you know, I guess it tickles the nerve of seeing if that talent's really there and he can do it consistently. So, well, you know, we'll know more as we get through Colorado, three games at home, and then go down to Atlanta where the season got off the rails last year for sure. Mm. Is there anything else you want to talk about here before we close it out and go to your interview with the Colorado Rockies blogger?
No, I think that's probably it for today. So we're going to go to an interview with Andrew J. Martin, who writes about the Rockies for PurpleRow.com. I want to say that when I taped the interview, the game on the Monday game had not yet been canceled. So we were still assuming that it would be Jamie Moyer going up against the Pirates on Monday. But everything else should be good.
And is Moyer getting the start on Tuesday?
I don't know. I don't know if we know that yet.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll look forward to seeing a 49-year-old out there at some point in the next couple of days.
Probably.
If that's the case.
Yeah.
All right. Without further ado, let's get to Charlie and Andrew Martin.
Welcome back to the Bucks Dugout Podcast. I'm here with Andrew J. Martin, who is a Rockies blogger for PurpleRow.com, the SB Nation site dedicated to the Colorado Rockies. He's here to preview the upcoming Rockies series with us. So welcome, Andrew.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Sure. So I want to ask you about all the starting pitchers for this series. They all have sort of an interesting story. Jamie Moyer is going to be the first of those. And, of course, that's been a big story around baseball, the fact that he's doing what he's doing and being so old while doing it. What's the latest with him?
Well, he just had a good start. That's for sure. We saw him go seven innings, and defense let him down a little bit, but that's almost been the most disappointing part about Moyer's starts, that the defense isn't helping him out too much. We're seeing guys like Tulowitzki and Carlos Gonzalez, who are normally very sure gloves, just, you know, muffin routine plays. That seems to be the story for Moyer so far. I mean, you watch him, and he looks all right out there. I mean, nothing's cracking 70, or, you know, not 70, 80, which is hilarious enough as it is, but he's keeping hitters off balance. And that's what's, I mean, it's the crazy thing about Moyer's career. For the past 25 years, he's been doing the same thing, throwing really slow fastballs on a lot of really bendy secondary pitches that he just puts wherever he wants, and it's been working for him. I mean, he's one of the most fielding-dependent pitchers out there because his strikeout numbers are just, you know, plummeting as he gets older. But he makes it work. I mean, he gives up his fair share of, you know, home runs, and he gives up his fair share of hits, but he doesn't walk too many guys. And the contact the guys are getting off him is usually pretty weak. He's been doing this, like I said, his entire career. And when he came out of spring training and then he got the rotation spot, manager Jim Tracy said, you know, Moyer's arm is great. We're very content with where it is right now. We're just concerned about his legs. You think, what do you mean his legs? Well, the legs is where all your longevity comes from when you're a reliever, or a starter, I mean. And, you know, he's just getting older. He doesn't have quite as much endurance as he once did, but he still went seven innings the other night. And if the defense will keep playing top-notch behind him, he's going to keep giving, you know, solid five, six-inning outings.
Another star the Pirates are going to see this weekend is Juan Nicasio, who he's never faced the Pirates before. Can you give us a little scouting report on him?
Well, the big story with Nicasio, well, we'll start at the beginning. He came up through the Rockies system and looked to be one of those guys who had rotation potential, more likely a career in the bullpen. And then middle of last season, when everything was going wrong, Nicasio made got the call from Double-A because he was absolutely dominating Texas League hitters. And he looked pretty good in the majors. I mean, he throws a hard fastball. He gets, you know, okay movement on it. He locates relatively well. He has a good breaking pitch to complement it. And he still kind of needs to work on mixing in that changeup a bit there. But, you know, for a guy who should have been in the bullpen, it's pretty awesome to see him in the rotation. So, you know, the big hang-up last year came when the Rockies were playing the Nationals in Coors Field, and Ian Desmond hit a comebacker right at Nicasio's head. And Nicasio was off balance still, having just thrown with his right, you know, throwing the right arm there, so he's off balance on his left foot, and he's bringing his glove up to try to catch the ball, and or at least deflect it, and the ball just goes right over the top of his glove. Like, he didn't get it up just fast enough, and it hits him in the side of the head. So he gets knocked unconscious right there and does a face plant into the mound and broke his neck when he hit the ground. And, you know, game was postponed, you know, horrifying situation, things like that, emergency surgery, because he'd broken the C1 vertebrae in his neck. Now, what's crazy about his story is that the surgery went really well, which isn't the crazy part. The crazy part is that within 3 weeks or so later, he lives downtown Denver, and he's just walking back to Coors Field, walking. I mean, when you come to neck injuries, you kind of wonder if the guy doesn't ever walk again, and yet he's walking back to Coors Field already with a neck brace on. Mm-hmm. During the offseason, his neck rehab went really, really well. And, you know, by mid-offseason, a little bit later in the offseason, they're like, this guy is going to be just fine for spring training. Like, no questions. Right now, he's clear to go 100%. We'd like to hold off on long-distance running. But past that, he's good to go. So he's the kind of guy, just as a straight-up pitcher profile, he comes out as the kind of guy who pounds the strike zone. He'll work both sides of the plate and, you know, throws it hard and makes you work to get a hit off of it. He's not the kind of guy who's going to necessarily confound you for a million innings because, you know, his stuff's breaking and bending every which way, but he's kind of a power pitcher like that. He can hit 97, and he's just going to come at you. He pitches with a reliever's mentality but stretches it out over 5-6 innings.
This is a Rockies rotation that you have some guys who are interesting for various reasons, but it's Moyer, Nicasio, Jeremy Guthrie, Yolish Chacin, and Drew Pomeranz. Definitely some interesting players in there, but this is not really a good rotation right now, I would say. How would you say that how do you see this shaking out as the season goes on?
There's an awful lot of question marks in the rotation right now. Out of the guys we have up, Jeremy Guthrie is most likely to stay in the rotation the entire season, regardless of what happens, you know, barring injury or whatever. He is a seasoned veteran and all those veterany things, and his ERA just sucks out loud right now. But, you know, it's been three starts.
Right.
There's room for him to rebound from this easily. He's not, I mean, he's pitched in the American League East, and while his numbers weren't phenomenal in the East, they weren't bad. And that's really all we wanted out of Guthrie is, you know, for him to give us 200 or so not bad innings. Down the line, I mean, again, now that Moyer's gotten his historic start, I mean, it's kind of playing with house money at this point. We'll see what he has left in the tank as he keeps going throughout the season. Pomeranz is likely, I mean, unless he hits a major setback, he's likely going to stick in the Rockies rotation with him. There's not too much he needs to learn from the minors still. When it comes to minor league pitching, all they really needed out of him was a kind of, you know, hey, you can throw professional innings, right? And he's like, oh yeah, sure, no problem. And he pitched a few decent starts in Double A Tulsa. And it's like, okay, this guy's ready. I mean, there's no question his pitching stuff is ready, that his, you know, pitching, as a pitcher, he's ready. As a person, that's the only real question. He's still young. He, you know, got a little bit of trouble this offseason. He's got some maturing as a human being to do. But as a pitcher, like, he needs to be facing major league hitters because there's not too much a AAA is going to teach him at this point. He's not the kind of pitcher who needs to, like, some pitchers who rely very heavily on, like, just a, you know, fastball change combo and that, and then they throw that the mixing and the breaking pitch is just kind of like flavor. Those guys need to spend time in AAA Colorado Springs because they'll get a lot of that altitude adjustment there. Mm-hmm. Guys like Pomeranz, their stuff is ready for the majors. They know how to command their fastball at, you know, various speeds. They know how to throw their secondary. It's more just figuring out how to mix with them and work with a major league catcher. So Pomeranz is definitely there for the rest of the season. Chacin is likely not going anywhere just because he has two seasons of success behind him. Last year he posted a 3.62 ERA in 194 innings. A year before, a 3.28 ERA in 137 innings, and he split some time in the bullpen in there as well. The kid's a good pitcher, mm-hmm. Very good pitcher. Just at his, I mean, he's hitting that kind of the slump. It's not necessarily a sophomore slump, but you could kind of lump it in there. He's kind of hit one of his first real snags in the majors, and that's wildness. He's got to keep that ball in the strike zone, or else he's not going to be as effective. He's already an extreme ground baller, which is nice because it helps reduce some of that walk damage. But he again, a lot of growth to you know, pitch later into games and give the bullpen more of a break. So Chacin's probably sticking around. So I mean, we can make the same thing for Nicasio, what we told you about. Really, these guys have their jobs until they don't have them anymore. The tricky part's really going to come in June-ish when Jorge De La Rosa comes back from the disabled list. and then there's going to be a tough decision on who goes down or who gets cut or who's in the bullpen. And that, I mean, it's a good problem to have five starters who, you know, while they're questionable at the exact moment, but, you know, come June, July, whenever Jorge De La Rosa is back, we'll have a clearer picture of who needs more remedial time, who can make a transition to the pen, and who, you know, what's going to happen there.
I want to ask you about Jim Tracy and his contract. And, you know, just from the perspective of a Pirates fan, to sort of set this up a little bit in case Pirates fans have maybe forgotten some of what's gone on here. Basically, what we know Jim Tracy as is a very bad manager who throws young players under the bus, abuses young arms, and just generally is a bad human being and a bad manager. And so he goes and gets the job in Colorado. Okay, and then the Rockies win 73 games last year, and in February he gets a handshake agreement from the Rockies, and Dan O'Dowd characterizes it as whatever number of years Jim wants it to be for. What's going on there? How is that possible that they like him so much, or does this extension mean that they actually like him that much?
Well, remember that he hasn't actually gotten an extension. When they said... It was a very vague article just to kind of say, hey, we don't have a definitive goal for Jim Tracy yet. There's no cutoff point yet where, oh, if he doesn't do this arbitrary thing, he's done forever or whatever. The fact is that when 2009 hit, Clint Hurdle, the Rockies' former manager and your guys' current manager, he'd lost the team, for lack of a better way to put it. Like, the team was not responding to him anymore. This isn't necessarily a shot at Clint Hurdle, because Hurdle, if you guys might have noticed this as well, he's a good developmental manager for a young team that has a lot of young talent filling up the majority of the field. But these younger guys had grown up now, and they're like, hey, we're Major League Baseball players now. We don't need any of your minor league coaching anymore, Clint. What do you got for us? And he goes, you swung at the first pitch too low. You're having a seat. And everyone's like, you're joking. He's pretty much our best guy. Why are you sitting him? And he's trying to make a lot of lessons that you do with a young team, but make him apply to an older team, and that it just wasn't flying. So he got the can. He got canned. Is that? It was time for the Rockies to have a change. So Jim Tracy had been hired to be a major league manager in there, and that 2009 season, everyone loved Jim Tracy because he did what any smart manager would do, especially in a situation with you know, some turmoil over who's running the team now. Is he kept his head down? He gave boring, pointless post-game pressers, which said, oh, we worked hard, oh, we didn't work hard enough, oh, we, you know, just did whatever, and he played his starters all the time. He relied on his pitching staff. He didn't do anything crazy up until September, when the Rockies went on that tear and won like a zillion games between, you know, late May and the end of the season. It looked like everything was good and fine, and Jim Tracy had won the team over. But, you know, honestly, I'm of the opinion that I could have managed that team to 92 wins. The real issue wasn't Jim Tracy doing good. September rolls around, and Tracy's pretty much guaranteed an extension at this point, and things started changing. Garrett Atkins, who was pretty much washed up at this point, they should have traded him after 2007, but he was suddenly getting starts. Yorvit Torrealba, who had sucked, I mean, he's not that good offensively, and all of his offensive production is going to come from a string of lucky seeing-eye singles. That's Yorvit Torrealba. And Jim Tracy goes, oh, look at those lucky singles. Never mind Chris Iannetta and his 900 OPS or whatever he was at that point. It wasn't that good, but, you know, Iannetta should have still been starting, and he's like, oh, let's start Torrealba every game now for no apparent reason. And so Iannetta was now under the bus. Ian Stewart was now under the bus. And it kind of proceeded that way through 2010 and 2011. 2010, Obaldo Jimenez had that near Cy Young season. Tracy would be leaving him in the game for 125 pitches when the team was up by 6 runs. He made a bunch of defensive switches. The one guy he leaves in his defensive position is Jordan Pacheco, who's been a catcher for most of his minor league career, and the Rockies want him to be a catcher, third, first, utility guy. He's terrible defensively at third base just because he's so out of practice. I'm not saying he won't get better, but right now he's awful, and what does Jim Tracy do? Leaves him in there instead of Chris Nelson, who's a natural infielder. Mm-hmm. Pacheco makes a key error that lets runs cross, and the Rockies end up losing the game. Every Sunday, he rests all his veterans at once and puts in all the backups. The reason it works slightly better this season is because the Rockies have a significantly better bench than last year. However, you don't swap out all your players at the same time. The Rockies had like a 17-game losing streak on Sundays alone, heading into August of last year. They finally won one, and it was like the biggest like Bronx cheer day of them all. You can't put out a quadruple A lineup on Sundays and expect to win because nobody else is doing that. But what terrifies me more about Jim Tracy is that this, I mean, people are like, oh, wow, I'm not hating him as much this season. Look at how long he's left Chris Nelson out there. Granted, he doesn't have many better options, but he's left Chris Nelson out there. He didn't, you know, there's been no call-ups for Brandon Wood or anybody like that. And Nelson's is a former first-round pick of the Rockies who's dealt with a lot of injury and motivation troubles, and now he's finally realizing, oh, my God, I'm a major leaguer. I have to. This is my shot. If I don't make this now, I'm done for. And he's playing like he wants it now. And so Tracy's leaving him out there. But he's leaving all his starters out there. And the only really questionable thing he's been doing for the most part this season is the Sunday lineups. And I think, oh, no, no, no. This is what he did in 2009. He's going to keep his head down and play his starters. He's in another extension, then going to go back to freaking Tracy ball. We're going to have to put up with this another 3 years, aren't we? Oh, he's going to get away with this, isn't he? I don't mean to just jabber here, and I'm sorry for giving y'all this Clint Hurdle talk, too, because you guys know what Clint Hurdle brings to the table.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, oh, my God, he is such a bad manager. Oh, I can't even put words to this. It's becoming such an irrational hatred that, like, he does things good, but he's not doing them good because of the good things. He's doing the good things because he knows that that's how he's going to keep his job. It's not so much like, hey, what's the best way to win this baseball game? Let's throw our stupid starters out there and not pull them at the first sign of trouble or not platoon everybody all the time, every possible situation. This will get me to keep my job. And now I got an extension. Back to stupid baseball. It's like, no, just do this. I would not, if he just left his starters out there all the time and then maybe sub people out a little more differently than all on Sundays, I wouldn't have a complaint about the guy. I would still bitch about some of his bullpen usage, some of his post-game interviews and throwing the team under the bus. But past that, like, I'd be like, oh, whatever. Every manager's an idiot. No big deal. But, it's like he's pulled the wool over the Rockies' brass, and they're just like, Jim Tracy's the guy. And, like, that's, no one cares. And no, you need to care, people. He's awful. He's ruining this team.
Yeah, that's really funny. Yeah, because we've certainly been there. So the Rockies' offense has a bunch of new faces this year, or semi new faces. Nelson is one of those, and then also Michael Kadire, Marco Scudero, Ramon Hernandez. Kadire has probably been the most successful one. Definitely been the most successful one of those so far. But what's your basic impression of the Rockies' offense this year?
The Rockies made all the right moves this offseason, so to speak. They made a plan and they stuck with it. A lot of the moves they made, we still had questions about, like, why did you give Michael Kadire 3 years, $31 million, when you could have had Josh Willingham for 3 years and, like, $21 million? Why would you not go harder after Beltran? Why wouldn't you just keep Seth Smith and, let him do his thing and bring in someone like Johnny Gomes or someone of that caliber to platoon with him in right field? Well, the issue was that they didn't like a lot of the players' attitudes on the team. Not so much that they were being, Lasting's Millage-style clubhouse cancers or whatever, but just more that they were there to collect a paycheck. They didn't want to be there. I mean, they do, but it's more like, all right, what do I need to do today so I can get paid still? And Tulowitzki actually called parts of the team out, saying things along the lines of they're more concerned about their arbitration raises than they are about actually winning the game. Well, easier for Tulowitzki to say. He's sitting on a $160 million contract. So they sent off Seth Smith for pitching depth. They sent off Chris Iannetta for pitching depth. They sent off Ian Stewart to the Cubs for Tyler Colvin and DJ LeMahieu, some, batting depth. They got a fourth outfielder and a potential utility infielder out of that. Not a bad return for a guy we were going to cut anyways.
Right.
So the rest of the offense, though, it's similar to 2004 that I mentioned earlier, because 2004 was the ragtag veterans, the Motley Crue, with a bunch of young guys coming up right behind them. It's not quite as blatant of a wave right now, but, like, Scudero's going to be here for a year. Maybe we'll give him a one-year extension next year. He's not a critical piece, but we wanted a guy in who can play, leadoff or number two, doesn't strike out a lot, and gets a bat on the ball. We wanted Kadire in here to be a leader for the team, as well as being a strong right field arm, which we've always had, and between Larry Walker and Brad Hopp. And we wanted some right-handed hitter in the middle of the lineup that we've been missing for a while now. We brought in a few guys to try third base, and they all fell apart, so we stuck with Chris Nelson, who's been up and down the last couple seasons, mostly as a utility guy, but he He kind of won third base because everyone else lost third base, but he's been holding the job well. Ramon Hernandez was brought in to help mentor the pitching staff, mentor William Rosario, and to just be, you know, a passable catcher who's going to be about average production. So they're hoping that in the next year or so here, you'll have Nolan Arenado, our top hitting prospect at third base, who is going to be an absolute beast. We hear about Bryce Harper and Mike Trout. Watch Nolan Arenado. Josh Rutledge, his teammate in Tulsa right now, had a huge second half on A-ball Modesto last year. He'll be pushing for the Rockies' second base job sooner than later. It was meant to be kind of a clubhouse turnover. And you know, the thing is, when they got Scudero at the last minute, you know, right before spring training started, everyone is excited because he was a final piece of the puzzle. The point is, the plan was in place to have a veteran, strong team, and that's exactly what we have. It's just an issue of now health and pitching, if this team's going to do good at all. Because you got a whole bunch of 36-year-old guys out there on the diamond. It's kind of, it's a little questionable as to how long they can hold up. But you know what? They're doing the job fine right now. And we, you know, being a transition year, if we win, great. If we lose, that's okay too.
Cool. Thanks, Andrew, for joining us. You can read Andrew's work at purplerow.com. Come find us on Twitter. I'm at Bucks Dugout, and David is at DT on Pirates. And thanks for listening to the Bucks Dugout podcast.